Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets. The college years.
Gotta love an underdog when he howls.
Now alongside Chris the Bear Felica.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Here's Stanford Steve.
It's here. It's the title game edition of Behind the Bets. The Bear is in Atlanta already. I will be there tomorrow. We are taping this on Friday afternoon. Hope everybody is trying to stay warm wherever they are in the country, which seems like it's a unbelievable cold effect all over the place. I don't know weather terms, but yeah, I know cold. And Bear, how we doing?
We're good. We're in Atlanta, and it's certainly not immune to the cold and wind down here, but the game is indoors, and we'll survive. But yeah, brutal weather throughout most of the country. So hopefully everybody is safe and thawing out and gotten their shoveling and de-icing done and getting ready for a pretty damn good game on Monday night.
I had a bad dream last night.
Did what, was your flight canceled or something?
No. Somebody wanted the Behind the Bets guys to go on SportsCenter, but they wanted it at 7 a.m. on an outdoor set down there.
Yeah, that's a nightmare, and the answer to that would be no.
Okay, good. I already, last year we did it. We haven't been asked so far. I just have a bad feeling it's coming.
Yeah, 7 a.m. Monday ain't going to happen, bro.
All right. I'm not sure.
Because what happens is, like, there's this little, like, four-hour game day show on Monday afternoon.
Before the game.
And then there's a thing called the game. So what happens is that turns the Bears' day into, like, a 6 a.m. arrival.
Yeah.
All the way through to, like, 2 in the morning.
That not happening.
The 20-hour day just not – more track than horse at this time of the year.
Very good. Well, it's here. I'm not sure if anybody's paying attention. I went 3-0, not to brag or anything, on New Year's Day. You went
3-1? I went no. I had
Michigan.
2-1 New Year's Day because I'm mad at myself because there was a little bit of a public weight on Michigan that I should have realized. That I did not account for, and it was a late add to the board. I threw it up late to fill in that spot, but you know what? They were up 19-3. They blew the lead. The Higdon fumble was the thing that really killed them. I mean, he doesn't fumble there. It's ball game.
Yeah.
So.
And cover.
Exactly. So give Will Muschamp, give South Carolina credit for taking advantage of all those gifts that the Michigan offense gave them, and two and one, not bad. And I know that I'm getting the bronze medal on the podium with my little Sports Center segment. That's fine. I can deal with it. I realize I went back through. I kind of made mistakes in the way I picked those darn games. I kind of was like in between, like picking favorites to win but not cover, and
yeah.
I was like, why don't I just pick like the underdog to win? Right?
Like so, Beano said.
Exactly, but yeah, split the semifinals. Knew I was on a bad side right away in New Orleans. So we'll see if we can go 2-1 in the bowl in the CFP with the win on Monday night.
Before we get there, just going back. I mean, you were at the Rose Bowl. I was at the Sugar Bowl. Did you ever feel like you had a sense, like when it got tied? Were you leaning a certain way?
Once it got tied, I was leaning Georgia for sure.
Even after the fumble
return? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, once Georgia came back and I thought you meant like once it got tied, it went to overtime.
No. Once the fumble happened and Oklahoma went up 7.
No, I still felt Georgia was in a good spot because they'd moved the ball at will in the second half and what they have 3 long touchdown runs to begin with. They were moving the ball at will, so I thought that they would be able to to get that one back. And I was happy to see Michelle score the game-winning touchdown after that fumble. Ugh. It was a good finish. But one of the biggest plays in that game was the blanket chip field goal right before the half.
Sure was.
It got it to a two-possession game, and Kirby Smart was able to go to the locker room and basically tell the team, look, I mean, they've thrown everything they have at you. They needed to run like a reverse throwback to the quarterback to get a yard to score a touchdown. It's a two-possession game. We get a stop, we get a score. It's one possession, and away we go. And that's pretty much how it played out in the third quarter. And once Georgia got back to level par, I kind of felt that they would win, and it wound up going that way.
Are you related to Blanket Chip? He looks like your brother.
No, I wish. He's an aspiring broadcaster, though.
Is he?
He's a journalism student down at Georgia, and I know Chris Fowler and Maria and Kirk, he's been chatting them up on industry pointers, I believe, and I really enjoyed spending some time with our broadcast team. And
if you were a kicker, though, you would rock the rec specs, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had to rock the rec specs and go back. But you see, back in our days, we didn't have any like normal type frames or like.
That's all there was.
Like you had the clear plastic frame that you'd pop the lens in and the blue and white elastic band on the back. I mean, that was it. You had one choice. That's it.
Oh, so good. All right. I was figuring we break this game down on both sides of the ball. What do you want to do first? You want to do the Bama offense versus the Georgia D?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I will start here. First off, I'm picking Alabama. It's at 3.5 right now.
Is it? I saw it tick back up to 4.
Let's see. Go by our boys.
I'm sure it's going to go a million different ways between now and
back to 4.
I see 444 and a half.
Okay.
Is what we're going to be going with right now.
I texted our buddies at Chalk, for ESPN.com, and I said last night, like, I don't know what you guys want, but my favorite pick is Alabama money line. I just want them with no points. If you guys want to make me
really
against the spread, I will take Alabama minus the 4. Let's start with the Al, and we can give our reasons why. You're on Georgia?
I am on Georgia, okay. Yes. It's funny you say that before we get into the breakdown.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I think there are two ways to play the game. I think you lay the 4 with Alabama because they'll just simply be better, or they'll get ahead, they'll get some turnovers, things will snowball, and they'll win comfortably, or you just take Georgia on the money line.
Okay.
I don't think it's a 17-14 Alabama win where Alabama wins, Georgia covers. I think it's lay the 4 or take Georgia on the money line plus that small offering back.
All right. Okay. A little difference of opinion. I like it. All right. Let's go with the Alabama offense against that Georgia defense. I just wanted to say, I thought Alabama's offense would be improved, and I thought a lot of people were making a big deal about Alabama not playing a great game against Auburn. They just didn't play well in that game, and hence the criticism of Dable because he's the new offense coordinator. Hurts didn't play well. The play has been, you know, lacking. What I will say is early on, I saw some nice adjustments where they were gashing Clemson. They had a couple good 8, 9, 10 yard runs. They missed a flea flicker. And I still thought Hurts looked more decisive. One thing I want to make a point about Alabama's offense is if you're going to try and nitpick what you saw from them when that score was 24-6 on in the Sugar Bowl, have fun at it. Like, that game was done as done could be. And Alabama just wanted to get out of there. But I did see some good wrinkles early on with, you know, when they were gashing with Harris. They missed the flea flicker, obviously. That's on Hurts. But I thought there was an improvement there, and they did enough to win. And that's what they're going to have to do on Monday night. Just do enough to win. I think both teams are going to be ultra conservative. And I think there's going to be about 15 to 20 design runs for Hurts. I think Alabama has the goods to move the ball effectively against this Georgia defense, and I think Ridley is primed for a big, big night.
See, I think you can view it that way in terms that hey, look, once ATN went out, once the receiver went out, they decided, you know what, they could play eight quarters and they're not going to score against us. But when it was still, it was 10-6 for a long time. And they're not going to be able to average 3.95 yards per play, which was their lowest in a game in over 4 years since 2013, and be able to win this game. Their offense, fewer yards than they had against Auburn. Again, I think Georgia's defense statistically is on par with Clemson. I think athletically they're on, but maybe the defensive line isn't as great. But I think this style of game that really plays right into the teeth and the strength of the Georgia defense. And it's going to be up, I think, to Jalen Hurts to potentially make some plays through the air. Ridley is the only wide receiver proven that can make plays. You look at Hurts in three playoff games, he has a total of 220-yard passes. I don't think he's thrown for more than 136 yards in any of those games. It barely 50% completions. It's on him. And look at the three playoff games. In two of those games, I think the Washington game last year and even the Clemson game this year, they were going to beat those teams regardless of how many points they scored. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to need to score some more points on Monday night, and it's going to be up to Hurts to potentially make some plays, throwing the ball downfield. And I was talking to somebody else down here before too, and he even wonders if you're going to see Hurts run a little bit more, because I don't want to say you're sacrificing him or not caring if it potentially gets beat up a little bit. But if his strength, the strength of his game is to run the football, and you know you have someone like Tua backing him up who you can bring in the game, if something does happen to him, maybe you do just run him into the ground with some run-pass options and see how far he can take you. But they're going to need to do better than under 4 yards of carry on Monday night to win the game.
No question. No question, and I have that confidence in them to do that. So people say, oh, well, how can you do that? I just have that confidence, and that's why I'm one of the main reasons I'm picking Alabama. And I'm not saying it's a trust, it's just a belief. So we're there on that. Let's get to the other matchup with Georgia's offense against that Bama D after this break. All right, Bear, you mentioned you're taking Georgia. Just want to get a couple comments here about Georgia's offense against that Bama D. You were there. You watched it. Your belief in Georgia is?
My belief in Georgia's offense is that they were fantastic. I think they have more answers than what Clemson had the other night between Sonny Michel and Chubb, and then Swift can come in and give you some plays. They're really deep. And if you look at Alabama, how they've done against the running game, the last three SEC opponents that they played, it's not as dominant as you would think. Now, you can say it's because they were missing guys, but 168 yards, two touchdowns allowed against Auburn. 172, three rush touchdowns against Mississippi State. 151 in the touch against LSU. And that's three straight SEC opponents that ran for over 150 yards. If you go back over the 19 previous SEC games, they allowed a total of six rush touchdowns and 100 yards in a game three times. So whether it was the injuries, whether it was whatever, they gave up some yards on the ground late in the year. Maybe we'll see if some guys coming back will help that. Mm-hmm. You factor in how well Fromm – the thing that impressed me with the most with Fromm, two things. We asked all year long what's going to happen when Jake Fromm is third and six, or they're down a touchdown late, and he's going to have to make a big-time throw against a good opponent. It's going to have to be him. What's going to happen? Well, I think in the second half of the Rose Bowl, we got our answer. He passed it with flying colors. And then the other thing, which I thought was even more impressive than his physical ability to make those big throws, was how good was he at the line of scrimmage getting Georgia out of bad plays and checking to a different formation and a different plays, which gave them an advantage and resulted in a successful play. He was great at the line of scrimmage. So now it's going to be an interesting chess match to see if he can do that against a much better defense. But I think Georgia has a lot of answers on offense, more than Clemson had. I think we didn't mention the injury to Cotton on the Alabama offense. That could be potentially a problem for the Crimson Tide on that offensive line. A bigger problem on defense for Alabama is the Jennings injury. He is a clear disruptor in the passing game, and his absence, I think, will certainly hurt Alabama defensively, especially getting after Fromm. So I think there are reasons and things you can point to think that Georgia will be better equipped to have success against the Alabama defense than Clemson did the other night.
Okay. I watched Jennings was going to be my MVP of the game the other night. Like if I went on with Van Pelt, like that's what I was going to talk about. It's just that guy was insane on how strong he was on that edge. And I went on with Cole Kubelik yesterday, and I asked him if he thought it was that big of a difference. Like, you know, obviously he was wondering about the spread. I'm like, I don't think it's going to affect the spread. Alabama's got guys. It's just he played that well against Clemson. So I don't think the injury is as big of a deal as people are making it out to be. I think it's a big deal, obviously, because everybody saw it, and you know what is ahead and what's at stake for Alabama and how well he played in that moment magnifies the situation. I really am curious with Fromm here, and I understand he was great against Oklahoma, but this is a whole different animal. And what I say that is I'm not taking anything away from him. What I'm saying is, like, now, you know, I could see Chaney wanting to protect him more. So bringing those tight ends in who are great blockers that Georgia has.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you mentioned Cole because that reminded me to bring up, he tweeted out some great clips of how well those tight ends block.
Yeah.
And that is a big advantage on the edge. I think that's a matchup too that Georgia can win.
Yes. But this is another thing. Oklahoma wasn't ready for that, and that's Oklahoma's personnel. And
correct.
In order to do that, what you're doing is you're max protecting. What I say is you're going to bring maximum guys in to pass protect and keep your freshman quarterback, you know, true to his reads and try and keep him upright. My issue is I don't know if Georgia's receivers can win on the outside consistently against this Alabama secondary. And if they're not, you know, if he's not going with a quick read, that pressure is going to be coming, and I'm not sure about the timing. So, put it this way, if there's anybody to devise against Alabama, it's Jim Chaney. So this dynamic against him and Saban and Pruitt is fascinating, and this is where I think the game is going to be won or lost because Georgia can't have negative plays. And, you know, I also look at the Wildcat last week and the success that thing had. I just don't see that working against Alabama. And unless they're going to continue to try and gas, you know, Alabama, you know, with those jet sweeps, with those go sweeps and, you know, trying to take a gain of one or two, I just feel like Alabama's strength. And when I say strength, I mean the strength of their players on the edge. Fitzpatrick is unbelievable. He could line up anywhere. And they saw something early when they were blitzing him, you know, from depth, in the first half that really got, I think, Kelly Bryant shook a little bit. So I don't see Georgia having success getting outside and running the ball. And I mean, maybe they'll pop one, but Alabama is just so consistent and invites you to run the ball downhill against them. And that's why that's why I like Alabama in this matchup. Like they're not going to get gashed away, and they're not going to get gashed the way they were against what success Georgia had against Oklahoma. And I'm maybe a little bit biased because I just watched this Alabama team in person, but that's the way I feel when you look at this matchup.
It's all fair points. Yeah, it's funny. Some people are bringing up the travel, and Nick Saban certainly brought it up about the quick turnaround. I think there is a little bit. I mean, I think he may feel maybe at a little bit of a disadvantage. I think one of the reasons why is Georgia is practicing in Athens on their own normal facilities. I mean, Kirby Smart, it eliminates the possibility of anybody maybe getting a peek at anything they may have in store for them, that maybe some wrinkles that Saban and Alabama might not be ready for. But I do think there's an advantage there for Georgia being able to sleep in their own bed. They're at their own facility. Maybe you keep about as normal of a routine as you can, and busing over in and out back and forth from Atlanta when they need to handle their college football playoff responsibilities and then head back home. So I think that's a positive for Georgia to try and be as normal as possible for their biggest game of the year.
A lot of extra pats on the back when they're walking around town this week. A lot of extra pats on the back. I just asked that question because I'm always fascinated how people look at things, and I still look at it like I would rather be Alabama coming into this matchup than Georgia. When you factor in all the stuff and where the game is and where you played last week and what type of game you played in last week. That's why I just thought it was interesting to ask the question. I mean, I'm not saying it's a game breaker, but like you said, it could be an advantage. It could be, you know, just a little something, but it's out there. I mean, we got a week. Everybody's talking about something. The suggestion I had was to move this game to Thursday. So that gives you 10 days. Do you think that we could see that in the future? Still a good night for TV, right?
That's too long. That's too long. Plug it a week. If you really want to go down the foxhole here, I think what you should do is play the semifinals the week after the Heisman Trophy, 2 weeks after the regular season ends.
Oof.
And then play the championship game on the night of the first or the second, whatever. That's what I think you should do.
All right.
But I don't think that will happen.
Are you keeping that confidential? You're giving that to the people now, right?
Myself and Reese Davis have given that to the people numerous times before. I mean, typically you see a lot of times some sloppy play or maybe games that take a while to get going after a long layoff. So I think you finish your conference championship games on the first weekend of December. Selection Sunday is the following day. Heisman weekend is the following weekend. That middle week right after final exams are over, play the semis then. Circle them up, rest of your New Year's six games, whatever you want to call them, on January 1st. The next night, standalone national championship game.
Perfect. There we go. What do you think? How many points does the winning team score?
24. 24-21, Georgia.
All right.
Low scoring game.
I think I had 23-17 is what I believe.
We're right on that. I think what we're looking at 444 and a half or something like that. So I'm pretty much right on the number.
Yeah, our boy Cole said 20. So he's expecting a dogfight.
He thinks even lower then.
Yeah. We also have another game Saturday. So hopefully people will listen to this before Saturday. It is the FCS championship game. It's at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. North Dakota State is -4 against James Madison in what is the ultimate Lee Fitting can't lose in this matchup, because here's what's going to happen. Lee Fitting's the old game day producer, went to James Madison, loves North Dakota State. When he brought the show there, he has an affinity for both schools, obviously. But JMU could lose, and he could just say, hey, if there was one team we could lose to, it's North Dakota State. And James Madison wins, he could just say, I love you, James Madison.
It's great out there, great scene. Maybe next year we can go back. classic can't-lose game.
Oh, it's so
– couldn't be more right.
I think I'm going to tweet out, like, hey, just so you guys know what's going to happen from Lee, if you're wondering, this is what he's going to say. Because the book's already written, no matter what.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
If JMU wins, it's – I see you, JMU Dukes.
Yeah.
Love the Bison, but the blood is thicker than whatever. And then the other way around, it's if the Duke's going to lose to anybody, let it be at NDSU Bison football. Whatever. Tweets are already in the draft section, ready.
Yep, you just got to pull them up. Who's your pick?
I'm going to go with James Madison. I think the defending champs, the Dukes, they kind of got their second life with that comeback win against Weber State. I mean, they were done. They were dead in the water. Got the miracle comeback and come back and win. I think defensively, the way they can force turnovers, they're very stout scoring defense. I think they can give that Bison running game and Easton Stick some problems. I really like the linebacker and secondary core, James Madison, and I think the Dukes get just enough offense and they repeat as national champs.
All right. No way I could go against North Dakota State with this time to prepare. The coaching staff is second to none, I believe, in that division of football, and I'd put it up there with some major college football programs. I'll lay the four. I'll also give you a little North Dakota State Alabama money line parlay. How's that for the people?
the double favorite money line parlay. Those never lose. Oh yeah, yay!
Hey, Alabama and Georgia came in.
That's true. Oh, we're gonna get favorites across. Actually, that's the funny thing lately in these college championships. I mean, the last four college football championship games. Two outright dog wins. Dogs covered all 4 years. You include college football, college basketball into the frame. The last eight games, seven of the eight have been underdog covers, and five of them have won outright. Huh. So dogs have been the way to go lately in these college championship games. So we'll see if that trend continues on Monday night.
Do you feel confident in your Georgia pick up against the last team all the playoff years? Do you feel?
Yes, I do.
You feel confident?
I do. I have felt more and more confident about it over the last couple of days. Ever since we did our little reunion podcast with Chad the other day,
okay.
I feel more and more confident since we've done that. I like the numbers I'm coming up with.
Yeah.
I like the fact that I think there's a little bit of value with Georgia. I mean, it's pretty much right on the power rating things, but I think there is. It's weird. I thought this number would be more.
So did I.
And the fact that it's not, and the fact that there have been a couple of very sharp money move plays on Georgia gives me confidence that I'm on the right side.
Okay. The most confident, I will admit, the most confident I've been in a title game since the playoffs started is easily Ohio State.
It's not even close. And we went through that, and remember it was like, I don't want to say a chain of like hate mail and comments on our column and response about how could you be so confident? How could you say Ohio State? We basically went down and were like, Ohio State's better at every position except for quarterback.
Yeah.
And why are they an underdog?
Yeah.
And, it was certainly a no sweat game. That's for sure.
Correct. All right. So this weekend we're getting together, right? Dinner?
We are, yes. We will we'll figure it out tomorrow on Saturday, and hopefully you'll get in no problems from the Northeast.
Yeah.
And we'll touch base when you get here, and we'll have a nice little time somewhere Saturday night taking a nice dinner and some football somewhere.
Yeah, you got any NFL picks for the people?
I'll be honest with you, I don't even know.
All right, here we go. Ready?
I think the Titans are playing the Jaguars.
No, they're not.
Right? No?
No, they're playing the Chiefs.
Okay, they go the other way. Titans are playing the Chiefs, and the Jaguars are playing the Bills. Okay.
Correct.
That's right.
Who you like?
Is Shady McCoy going to play for Buffalo?
He's a game-time decision.
So they're playing game-time decision on you. It's a big number, too, isn't it?
They're all big numbers.
Nine?
Chiefs, 8.5. Rams, 6. Jaguars, 8.5. Saints, 7.
Rams have who?
The Rams are hosting the Falcons Saturday night.
Sounds like an over game to me.
Yeah, 48.5.
Sounds like an over game.
All right.
I think of all of those, I like the Chiefs. I think the Titans' offense stinks.
There's one blowout. There's always one blowout. That's the one I think it is. However,
I
will take every underdog in a teaser.
Tease them up to over two scores.
Heck yeah!
You'd rather tease all the dogs up to a big number and
yep.
Start thinking that there's going to be a blowout than rather just tease all the favorites down and think they win.
I'm not an NFL guy, Bear. I'm just trying to have a little action in every game.
neither am I. That's why it's fun to kick. I will say this. I was out in Vegas for the Vegas Bowl. I took my three card Monty to beat the Eagles in the NFC.
Oh.
And the Vikings. I took the Rams, Falcons, and Saints all to win the NFC. And I took the.
Was that before Wentz got hurt?
No, this was after Wentz got hurt.
Okay.
So I figured it was still apparent that they were going to get home field, and I was like, they're not winning the NFC with Wentz out.
All right.
So I will. I'll take like multiple opportunities to beat the Eagles with the Falcons, the Saints, and the Rams. And I got the. I think I got 14, 16, 18 to 1 on Falcons and the on the Saints and the Rams to win the Super Bowl. So I'll take my chances there.
All right. At least you know who they're playing this week. That always helps.
Exactly. That was literally, you know, last Sunday, I was sick as could be back in the, back in Pasadena. And uh-huh. Monday was just a lot. I was like, I was out of it. I do remember how great was Boom though on with our boy on Sunday calling in from Maui.
Yep.
And dropping the, like, what, five ex Bills coaches in the playoffs. I mean, he's the best.
He's one thing he never forgets. He's amazing. Amazing, man. The memory's amazing. All right. That's going to do it. Any last words down from Atlanta?
No, it's been fun. Thanks everybody for listening this year, watching and, reading the column. Wish we could have had better success in the column. It wasn't brutal. But it certainly hasn't been as good as years past, and Bowls have kind of been a bit of a wash. But hopefully we can put a winning Gee, one of us will win Saturday on Monday night,
yeah.
Steve. If that's the way to spin it, right?
Yes.
Someone's going to win on Monday night.
Exactly. That's the way to do it. Yeah, thank you to all the listeners.
I think it's going to be me.
Mike behind the glass. Appreciate everybody. Hopefully we will talk to you in the near future with a little college basketball coming up, but – that'll do it for the 2017 college football season as we're now in 2018. Behind the Bets, the college years, you guys listening are the best. Thank you, everybody. And don't bet any money you don't have.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.